Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Good to have you along. I'm Neil Stave. I'm really looking forward to today's program and hope you've enjoyed the week. If you've been listening here over this past week, we've kind of had a bit of a school theme going, which seems kind of appropriate because there's college is back in session, and several high schools. Ted, I think you have one of your daughters, or are they both in?
One's back. My other goes back after Labor Day.
Yeah. So
that's going over well in our house.
Yeah,
competition,
sure.
Jealousy.
Sure that is. Well, we're going to focus today on school, particularly that tough season of life called middle school. And we've got the inside story today. That's, in fact, the title of a book we're going to reference, Middle School, The Inside Story, What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. And, your kids are probably in that era where it's kind of like, yeah, yes, no.
Yeah, one word answer.
Fine,
answers,
yeah. Sure, good, yeah, whatever. So we'll find out about that if our guests were able to actually draw out any more than one word answers. But I don't know if I remember much about middle school, except I do remember playing 8th grade bench on the basketball team.
Oh, yeah?
Got in the last, maybe 45 seconds of the game. And still managed to dribble it off my knee or throw the ball away. And so, of course, at that age, you're playing with guys who are much more, physically developed. So, they look like 10th graders. And
sure.
Scrawny little kid playing something. Wasn't a good time for me, as I recall.
But yeah.
Anyway, how about you?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I was kind of a class clown back then, so I saw a little bit of the principal and such. It got straightened out, thankfully.
Sure. Okay. Well, we have a couple of educators to help us just work through these challenging times. And even if you don't have a middle schooler, maybe you have a grandson or granddaughter's middle schooler, or you're working in your church and just kind of working with your youth group, you can just find ways that you can be an encourager. We've got some copies of this book that will be given away as well at the end of the hour, so I want to encourage you to sign up for that. Let me introduce our guest, Cynthia Tobias, the founder and CEO of Apple Street. It's Applied Learning Styles, and she's a best-selling author of at least 11 books, including The Way They Learn, You Can't Make Me, But I Can Be Persuaded, and Every Child Can Succeed. And she's been one of the favorites for the best in broadcast for folks in the family radio, and has got lots of years in business ownership and teaching and even law enforcement. And we're just grateful to have Cynthia back with us. Sue Acuna is a teacher, a mother of twin sons, who I think recently graduated from college, and she and her husband, Jack, live in the Seattle, Washington area. She's a teacher. In fact, Sue and Cynthia live not too far from each other in Washington State, and they're on the line with us today because they've co-written this wonderful new book called Middle School, The Inside Story. Cynthia and Sue, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Neil.
I do want to just say right away, I know we've been watching a little bit about Washington State in the news. It's Central Washington that's really been hit with dry and fires. And I think we just talked before the show, you said maybe some rain coming this weekend.
Yes, and our whole state has been impacted by it. We're really praying that the rain does come.
Good reminder for us.
I don't think Seattleites have never been so excited for rain.
Good. Well, let's just say a word about how you collaborated on this book and maybe why you collaborated on the book. And Cynthia, maybe we'll start with you.
Well, when I talked to Focus on the Family, they wanted something about, adolescence and middle school age. And I agreed to do the book, and I thought, I can't really do it without getting together with a true middle school teacher. And there was only one name that came to mind because I've known Sue for several years, and she's just a premier, wonderful middle school teacher after 20 years who still loves it. So she and I got together, and she just has added, her expertise is wonderful with the book. She works with the kids even now in the classroom. And it was a real delight for me to be able to not only collaborate with Sue, but for us to spend time with 200 or 300 or more middle schoolers over the last couple of years putting the book together. It was a lot of fun.
Sue, is it unusual that someone would be teaching middle school for 20 years and still liking it, still loving it?
You know, I always get blessed when I tell people that I teach middle school. Like at the grocery store, they'll say, oh, what do you teach? And I'll say, I teach 7th and 8th grade. Oh, bless you. So I think people think it's hard. But middle school teachers, you know, we're an unusual breed. And most of us stay with it because we figured out how to adapt to their little quirks.
Hmm. And there are some quirks. We're going to unpack a few of those today. And by the way, if you have a middle schooler and maybe you're wondering about it, or maybe someone going into middle school and you know, already concerned about what that's going to be like, I'd love to have you join the conversation. And at the very least, call and sign up for one of the copies of the book. We'll do a drawing for that. I've got three copies to give away at 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. And yes, I just wanted to jump in. Maybe a first question. I'm guessing maybe one of the key concerns of every middle school child centers on insecurity. And how anxious are these kids? Sue, give us a little sense of what life is like at the middle school.
You know, it's so different from elementary school, where they are loving each other and loving their teacher, and things just seem so much simpler. They feel the pressure when they start middle school that they have to be teenagers, and they'll talk about the heaviness of the responsibility, and they'll also talk about the expectations of their parents, that they feel that grades matter so much more to their parents, and high school is right around the corner. And then the relationships, you know, it's such an awkward time of growth, and they don't realize they're all feeling that awkwardness. They look around and say, oh, look at her. She's got it all together. I wish I were like that. And inside, they're all feeling the same way. I don't fit in.
Yeah, you know, Neil, one of the things that was the most revealing, I thought, to us was when we asked about, you know, their top 10 list of fears when you go into middle school. And, you know, we figured out that they're probably some of the standard ones, and parents would guess at some of the fears, what they are. But when we really got down to it, you know, the whole inside story, they would confide in us what they wouldn't confide in their parents. And the number one fear across the board of hundreds of middle schoolers was the fear of looking stupid. And that has never been more prevalent than when they first start middle school. It stays throughout middle school, but this time of real uncertainty, when they first go there, they have no idea really what to expect. Because like Sue said, elementary school is night and day difference from what they're encountering, and they don't want to do it wrong.
Well, of course, I guess middle school, generally, is it sixth grade now, right, or seventh grade? I mean, I suppose it varies from school district to school district.
Right. However,
we considered it. Go ahead.
Ages 10 to 14.
6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Those are the toughest grades.
Yeah. So they're sort of, you know, king of the school in 5th to 6th grade, and then suddenly they're coming in as the sort of bottom rung. So I guess that alone, and then generally it's seldom in the same school, so they're, I mean, there's a lot of factors going into it, isn't it, that can lead to that kind of fear of looking stupid.
And they have multiple teachers. They have to find their way around a new building. They have things like locker combinations and lunch, big lunchroom with bigger kids, and it's a lot of scary stuff.
The lunchroom is a big deal.
Because they don't know, Cynthia, say more about that. They don't know where to sit, or just it's
right.
Just
who do you sit with? How do you know the cool kids might not want you to be there? What if you choose the wrong table? What if somebody actually says to you to go away and then you'd be really embarrassed? And, you know, what if you wore the wrong thing? I mean, there are just a million things that go through their mind.
Mm. It brings up, I guess, a question I had, too, about what advice do you have for maybe helping these kids find friends and making friends and being a friend? If they're, you know, they're moving into a totally new environment. So, Cynthia, just let's talk about friendships and how important they are and how sort of fragile this time is.
Well, you know, Sue's got some great tips. One of the things that she does with her kids, and I'll let you tell her, I mean, her tell you even more, but there's just really a lot of honesty and openness on the parents' part about, you know, sort of facing your fears. Are you worried? Is there something particular you're worried about? Are you going in with some friends? And you know, the kids are reluctant to tell you necessarily, but there are some things that you can do to just sort of ease their fears. So if you want, there are two or three things that you recommend right away to parents, even before their kids get to middle school, for your kids, aren't there?
Yeah, I tell parents that, you know, recommend to your kids that they keep the friends that they know to start with. Don't immediately dump them because you think someone else is cooler. You need to keep the friends that are comfortable. And then before you jump into new friendships, kind of give it a few days, get the lay of the land, because maybe what you first think about that person is not really who they are. And so it's good to just kind of get a feel for it. And then I tell parents to tell their kids, be friendly to everyone. Don't determine that if the crowd feels that this person is not worthy of everyone's respect. You know, if there's that subtle bullying that goes on, don't be a part of it. Be friendly and welcoming to everyone, because all the other kids are watching that, and they will see that you are someone they can be comfortable with.
Right. And we did talk to kids who had just finished middle school, and we asked them for some what advice would they give about friendships to the middle school kids that were just starting. And overwhelmingly, they said, you know, be careful who you hang out with, who you decide to hang out with, because your friends are going to determine to a large extent how well your middle school years go. So you don't want to just automatically, like Sue said, you don't want to think, well, maybe I want to hang with these kids or those kids. And you want to just be very careful in your approach to how you form those lasting relationships.
The book we're referencing is called Middle School, The Inside Story, What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. And there's 200 to 300 or so middle school kids that have been part of some important research that Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna have put together. The book talks about changes. They talk about parenting, about friends and other problems, and about the school. And we're going to address all of those as we go along. Cynthia Tobias is a best-selling author of the book The Way We Learn, You Can't Make Me, But I Can Be Persuaded. Also, Every Child Can Succeed, the 11 or so books, is 20-plus years as a business owner and teaching and in law enforcement. Sue Acuna, a mother and a school teacher, have been 20 years teaching middle school. And both are teaming up in this great resource, which is published by Tyndale and Folks in the Family. And we've got some copies to give away. Love to have you sign up for one, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And we'll continue talking about some of those questions. You heard the word bullying come up in the conversation here just a moment ago. We'll pick up on that after the break. Stay tuned. Glad to have you listening to Connecting Faith today. We're focusing on school, particularly for those that are in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, maybe heading into that time, or soon will be, or, you know, really, if you're a parent of a child of any age, this is some great insight and advice, and you know, kind of the world of our kids and what they're facing today. We're talking particularly about middle school, The Inside Story. That's the title of the book from Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna. Joining us today, the subtitle is What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You, and want to find out maybe why they tell them and won't tell us as parents. And before we want to talk about bullying, because that came up here in the last segment, but one of the titles in the first segment is The Good, the Bad, and the Gangly, which I think just kind of describes how you sort of feel as a middle schooler. Sue, maybe just we'll start with you. Say a word about, you know, this. You know, what's going on in the life of these kids? I mean, their bodies are definitely in a season of change, aren't they?
It's not unusual for especially a boy to grow 8 to 10 inches between the beginning of 7th grade and the end of 8th grade. And so you can imagine how much havoc that wreaks with their awkwardness and their clumsiness. And they'll bump into furniture and bang their shoulders on doorways. And they're so self-conscious. They're terribly embarrassed. And for parents to realize that the physical changes are the ones we can see. Inside, you know, mentally, they're more abstract. They can think about things like forever. And emotionally, of course, they're all over the place, and some of that is due to hormones. So there's just a lot going on, what we can see and what we cannot see.
And Cynthia, I don't know if you want to add to that as well. I mean, you've raised a few boys. You know about changes, right?
Well, you know, one of the big things, they want to be talked to like adults, but they still have really big bouts of periods of immaturity to respond like kids. That can be a little bit tricky for the parents. And one of the real practical things that we mentioned in the book with the physical changes and how clumsy they can get is just to sort of be on the lookout for prevention. You know, for in other words, if you see that cup of Diet Coke is right on the edge of the table and you know that elbow is about to hit it, just kind of reach over and push it there without them noticing it, not to make a big deal of it, not to say, why would you do that? Because you know you know, just not say anything. You go to the movie theater, don't sit on the end where or in the middle where everybody has to crawl over and your middle schooler is going to trip and be clunky on the way out. Just, you know, make sure that he or she has a seat toward the end and just little subtle things that you can sort of prevent because they're going to have enough angst as it is, that's for sure.
Yeah, we child-proof our houses when the kids are little, and maybe we just kind of do a different kind of proofing here when they're
sure that you need to,
middle schoolers. Yeah, I think you referenced sometimes subtle bullying starts in the lunchroom. What's your best advice to deal with bullying? What does that look like today? I mean, assuming you can lead off on this one as well.
We have a lot of discussions in class about bullying, as you can imagine, and I'm blessed to have a mostly self-contained classroom, but the kids still deal with it, if not in the classroom, certainly out on the sports field or even at church or in other activities. And the biggest advice I give them is hold your head up and look that person right in the eye, because a bully's looking for power. And if you've got your head down or you're, they can bring you to tears, that gives them that kind of power. But if you can hold your head up, look them in the eye. Bullies tend to be really insecure. That's hard for kids to believe, but we as adults know that. And so if you can, not stare them down in a challenging way, but just look at them, it tends to diffuse them a little bit. Also, if you can talk to someone who's bullying you one-on-one, you'll get much better results than if you try and take him or her on when they're with their peers or in front of a crowd, because everybody has to save face. But if you can have a one-on-one conversation and say, hey, just like you to cut that out, you might get better success. The hardest thing is with kids, they're so embarrassed about being a victim of a bully, and it's hard to get them to confess that to parents and teachers. So as adults, I think we have to be hypervigilant and watch for signs or overhearing conversations in the car. And sometimes we have to step in, but it's hard for the kids to ask us to do that.
Cynthia, is this more an issue for boys or girls, or does it matter?
It's really different between boys and girls. Bullying can sometimes be much more open when it comes to the boys, but as Sue can verify, the girls are, a little more, what we would, in the old days, we would call it catty, just a little sneaky and sarcastic and sort of, it's not really bullying, it's just, I can't believe you chose to wear that. And you can wither with a glance or some little nasty remark. And that doesn't really seem like bullying per se, but we talk to a lot of kids who just really struggle because of just the little sly remarks. And so sometimes, again, that goes back to the friends that you're with, those who you hang out with, those who you want to be like. And it's something for the parents to watch. It may not be this active bullying in a large sense, but in the subtle sense, it can do sometimes just as much emotional damage.
I was wondering, is this a time when cliques kind of get going or get established? Is middle school sort of a prime ground for that?
Well, I think it starts earlier, Neil. I know we have had issues with cliques in third and fourth grade. But in middle school, they become much more defined by who you are and what you do. And every year, it breaks my heart to hear kids say, well, I just want to be one of the cool kids, or I just want to hang out with the cool kids. And the cool kids can be those who are successful at athletics, or those who come from families that have more money, or just those who are really popular. And kids look at that group, and they want to be part of that group, and they're willing to maybe change themselves to be part of that group, and yet it usually doesn't work, because that's just not their group of friends. They don't have anything in common. And so I like to tell them it will get better. Ninth, 10th grade, people become friends because of of mutual likes and mutual hobbies, not so much because I want to be seen with you or because you're somebody I want to be with, but it's hard to watch.
And it's one reason why, too, Neil, that we, using learning styles and other things, we really try to help parents and kids focus on strengths. In other words, not to point out what you should be doing and what you need to practice more of and what you have to get better at, but starting with, you know, you are really good at playing this particular instrument. That's an incredible gift. How can we help you use that in order to help in the math class where you're struggling, or in order to overcome your shyness somewhere else? You know, we want to be sure that we're focusing much more on what the strengths are and how to use them to overcome the limitations, rather than simply pointing out what needs to be fixed.
Which is,
and the non-academic and non-athletic gifts, I try to make a point of pointing those out. You are a really good listener. You have a really positive attitude. I've noticed you encouraging people. I like how you have such a servant's heart. You're always there willing to help and clean up. Kids don't always see the value of those things as much as grades or athletic ability or musical ability, and it's good for them to know God has gifted them in that specific way to show his love to other people. And oftentimes they'll just, their face will brighten up and they're like, yeah, I am a good listener, aren't I? And it shows them that there's a value that they may not have considered.
Of course.
And one that can't necessarily be measured.
Yeah, that's right. And this is a time, a season in their life where suddenly they, you know, they sort of start, they have to start thinking about, all right, what are my sort of gifts and abilities, right? I mean, it's not a bad time to do that. We sort of, you know, we push them into taking career assessments, you know, and figure out what they want to do with the rest of their life. But to help them understand their giftedness is not a bad thing at any age, really, I guess.
Right, and it builds confidence.
Yeah. Which they desperately need.
Yeah. Yeah, you were going to say, Cynthia, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, just, you know, with understanding your strengths comes confidence. And it's like Sue said, she watches the metamorphosis from the very beginning when they come so uncertain. And I've watched her teach and how she interacts with her kids there in the classroom. She really does help them build up and focus on that. And by the end of the school year, these kids are really strong and confident in many ways that they couldn't have been if all they'd had was pointing out their weakness.
Mm. We'll talk more about that. I want to talk especially, too, about, you know, how we as parents or maybe just caring adults in a middle schooler's life, how do we offer words of blessing, encouragement to these kids that are going through some challenging times? And we want to hear more about what middle schoolers are telling their teachers and not telling us. Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna, our guests today, they've written a new book called Middle School, The Inside Story. Actually, it's been out here for a year or so. And we've got some copies to give away. And if you'd like to sign up for the drawing and also join the conversation, here's the phone number. It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. More with Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Gee, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough at any age. We're talking particularly about some of those challenging years when you're 6th, 7th, or 8th grade. Talking middle school, The Inside Story. The subtitle of the book is What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna have co-written this book. Sue is a middle school teacher, got 20-plus years in. Cynthia is a best-selling author and has taught for a number of years, also been a business owner and authored some 11 books. And her and her husband have twin sons, and they both live in the Seattle area. And they did a lot of research on this and found out a lot of things that kids tell them that won't tell us. And maybe we'll just start with that. By the way, we've got some copies of the book to give away. If you'd like to sign up and maybe you have a question or a comment or a story, you still remember vividly your middle school years, maybe for good or bad. I'd like to hear from you at 877-93-FAITH. So, Cynthia and Sue, why do kids talk to you, but they don't talk to us? And, you know, Sue, is it just because you're a teacher and they've learned to trust you? Or?
One of the things I'm passionate about, and one of the things I always tell parents, is it's important to listen without judgment or problem-solving or criticism. And I think that's what they found with Cynthia and me, where we talked to kids in Colorado, we talked to kids up here in Washington, and when they discovered that we were going to listen without judgment, they just opened up like flowers. I think parents are too quick to jump in and say, you know what you should do, or why didn't you, or I'm surprised you don't, or let me get on the phone, and kids just shut down because they want to share, and they complain. Cynthia has mentioned the no-no list, which is available on her website, and the no-no list is for parents. It's 10 things parents do that inhibits communications with their kids, and that's things like interrupting or finishing the story. So we listened, and we used a lot of empathy. Wow, that sounds hard. And they just talked and talked and talked.
Yeah, they were really anxious to share once they understood that we weren't going to be judgmental or sound like, you know, typical parent response. And parents, I mean, they do it out of the absolute best of motivations. It's just that you've been so used to having them as a child and they count on you for everything that it's very difficult, this whole transition period, to try to transition into starting to treat them more like an adult. And they're really looking at us as parents to figure out how does an adult ask and how does an adult talk, and they're really trying to figure it out.
And as you said, I mean, we probably just can't help ourselves by pointing out, you know, the things that we find the things that are wrong as opposed to really celebrating the right. And you know, are there some just by looking at that no-no list, is that enough, or is there maybe some other strategies for us to kind of reorient our parenting approach?
Well, you know, I think one of the overarching things is to just try to remember that they're not annoying us on purpose. That there really are some reasons that because they are exasperating and they are frustrating. There's just no doubt. I'd love to have Sue just quickly share the whole idea of the bubble, for example. There, it's because the parents get so frustrated saying, why is it all about you? You know, life is different. Life is bigger than this, and you better just snap out of it. But there really are some legitimate reasons that your middle schooler looks like they're somewhat in a fog or that they don't have a clue sometimes. If you have time, but Sue, you want to just really quickly get
sure.
the bubble
yeah,
thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that all goes back to what we talked about earlier. There are so many changes going on within them. I mean, you know, it's why they're looking in the mirror for hours in the bathroom because their face is changing. It's less babyish and more adult-like, and they might be sprouting hair, and they're, like I said, their emotions all over the place. They're focusing on all the things that are going on and that pressure to fit in. And so they become very absorbed, and we call that being in the bubble. And they don't mean to be self-centered. When I approach a group of teenagers walking down the mall and they don't get out of my way, I don't assume that they're being arrogant and thinking they deserve to own the whole mall. I realize they don't even know I'm there, because they're very absorbed in their own world. And I just say, excuse me, and they look around like, whoa, where did you come from? And they will let you through. I see that in the classroom. We've just had a discussion on what the assignment is and when it's due, and invariably somebody will raise a hand and say, when is this due? Because they were busy thinking about something else. So parents need to be patient, and I like to say, stick your head inside the bubble and let them know that there are other people out here that they need to remember.
And this doesn't mean that you're letting them get by with bad behavior, obviously. It just means that you have, again, you go back to a little bit of empathy, thinking and giving them the benefit of the doubt. You probably didn't notice that I was talking, right? and just, you know, smiling a little and having a little sense of humor while you hold them accountable. You don't get to interrupt every time that I talk, but maybe did you notice that I was talking here and not making as big a deal of it or coming down quite as hard?
Well, and I imagine too that kids probably know that they mess up plenty of times, right? So they're well aware of that. I mean, when they're aware, maybe they're well aware that they're not doing it all right anyway, and so any criticism can probably wound even deeper.
Yeah, I think
some of our best
aware.
Sessions, some of our best sessions, right, were when we asked them, what have you done that you didn't mean to do, or what have you done that was embarrassing? What are some of your embarrassing moments? And they'll talk about walking into walls or their parents, you know, getting ready to leave, and they look up and they have no idea what's going on. You're right, Neil, they're very aware that they're messing up, and they're very worried about doing that. It's all part of that anxiety we talked about in the beginning.
Let's talk about how not to rescue our kids, but maybe to give them the tools to succeed. Cynthia, we may start with you. Thinking maybe even as a parent going to the teacher, you mentioned kind of one of the no-nos is like we interrupt and, well, we'll just get on the phone and we'll solve that right now. But so we don't want to rescue, but we still want to, you know, we are still parents of our kids.
Right. Sometimes it's really easy to overparent early on because, again, you've been so used to taking care of everything with the kids. You might want to just bend over backwards to make sure. But, you know, Sue's had some horror stories of parents that come in with their middle schooler and, you know, well, where is he supposed to put his shoes and what's he supposed to, you know, and trying to do things that the middle schoolers will tell you they're absolutely, totally humiliated by. My favorite phrase, of course, is the chapstick mom. And Sue can tell that story just quickly because I think it encapsulates this whole idea of how much can you overparent and how much should you just back off. What about the chapstick mom, Sue?
That was a student in seventh grade who lived about 15 miles away. Her mom had dropped her off, gone back home, when the student realized that she had forgotten her chapstick. So she called her mom, and her mom made an extra trip back to school just to bring her chapstick. And that, of course, is the kind of mom who will bring lunches and will ask if they can fax homework and can you give an extra day because we didn't get the printer fixed, or they just want to take full responsibility for their kids. And I like to say, kids don't wake up at 18 and suddenly become a responsible young adult. It has to be a process, and you have to give them a chance to maybe make some mistakes and to face consequences of being irresponsible, because then they learn, number one, that they survive it, and number two, how to cope with it, and hopefully, number three, how to prevent it from happening again next time.
And those price tags are a lot lower now than they will be after 18. So you want to be able to back off and give them a little responsibility and let them, as you know, let them experience some of the consequences.
So, Sue, let me ask you this. When a parent comes to you, maybe it's because there's an issue with the child, or you know, maybe you're kind of surprised by whatever the reason is, but what's the best way for a parent to engage with the teacher when there maybe is, you know, a grade that doesn't seem right, or whatever the circumstance might be, or there's, you know, a child's not doing well under your teaching or whatever it might be?
The first thing I will tell a parent is to have the student talk to me, because the student needs to start taking responsibility for his or her own learning and his or her own grades. So if a parent calls and says, you know, James was really upset about the grade that he got on his science test, I'll say, oh, okay, have him talk to me tomorrow. And I'll talk to the student first. And then if the parent is still not satisfied, then I'm happy to talk to the parent, but I always keep putting it back to the student. And then it's nice when parents come in with an attitude of, can I just get more information, or can you tell me what happened here, rather than accusing or blaming. And I don't see as much of that as you might expect, but every so often there are the parents who come in and want to know why their child is getting a bad grade, and I hadn't let them know about it. And some of that, I think, is a child's responsibility. Some of it is parents maybe not using all the resources available to them. I think most secondary schools now have grades online that parents can check. So it's just a gentle, you know, reminding them, first of all, students should be responsible, and secondly, that there are resources, and make sure that they're aware of all that. And sometimes parents aren't, and then we sit down, and it's a time to show them how to use these resources. But to hold a child responsible, I think at 13 means that at 16 they're more responsible when you want to send them out with a driver's license. At 18, when you send them off to college, then hopefully they're even more independent and responsible. And that's our goal, right? Independent, responsible young adults.
And this is a window of opportunity, because once ninth grade hits, the permanent grades count. And in the meantime, it's not that grades don't count and don't matter in middle school, but this is your opportunity, if you're going to do a little trial and error, to see what actually is going to work. this is the time to do it. So rather than emphasize straight A's at any cost, which often causes kids to cheat or to figure out different things, you want to say, let's figure out what's going to work best, what's going to help you concentrate when you do your homework, and why didn't this work, and what else can we try? And this is the time when you still have a little bit of wiggle room before it starts counting on a permanent record.
So, Cynthia, say a little bit more about that, because you've written extensively and taught on the learning styles, the way we learn, and say more about that. If we have a little bit of wiggle room there, I mean, a lot of it perhaps is, in fact, just our bent toward learning, right?
It is, and one of the things that I really appreciated about Sue, several years ago, she started at the very beginning of the school year. She takes her students through a learning styles profile, teaches them about it, so that all the way through the school year, they can be using it, and she can be referring to it and saying, but if you know that you're a more auditory learner, what's going to help you remember these words then? What's going to help you study for this test? And get the kids themselves thinking about, oh, this is why it doesn't work. If I study this way, I actually remember it better. And then for the rest of their academic career as well as the rest of their life, they begin to figure out, again, what their own strengths are. How do I survive when the classroom doesn't match what I am? And so giving them that, and we spend some time in the book in a whole section about the learning styles, the importance of that, and ways to help them figure out what are your strengths? Because when I taught high school, and I would tell my high school kids, sometimes you're going to find a teacher that teaches just like you, and that's going to be a great gift because it's not going to happen very often. And when you graduate from high school, sometimes the world's going to do just what you want, hardly ever though. So you need to figure out now, I need to know what do I need when I get into a situation where I realize none of this matches what makes sense to me. Am I going to quit? Or am I going to figure out how do I survive and succeed?
Sue, Cynthia said, that you still keep the responsibility on the students, but you're aware that they have different styles, so you encourage them to be more creative, I guess, in the way that they approach the assignments and things, right?
And I had a ninth grader last year come bouncing into my classroom and wrap me up in a big bear hug and say, thank you so much for teaching me about my learning styles. Because she had tried studying by looking at notes and reading over her notes and flashcards. That hadn't worked for her. She's a really auditory learner. So she learned that the best way to study for a test was to get together with another auditory learner, and they could talk through all the concepts they needed to know. And just by hearing it, hearing their own voices say it, hearing each other say it, they could learn better. And she was doing really well in high school. But I tell you, Neil, when you have a parent who has one learning style and they have a child with another completely different learning style, that's when the conflicts happen. And one example is a parent who's a planner kind of person, and they've got everything with tabs and dates, and they're frustrated because their child is not that kind of an analytic learner. They can't handle a planner. They just lose it. They don't put anything in it. So maybe they're more of a post-it kind of person. They put post-its in their book to remind them of the assignment and the due date. And it's part of what I try and do is help parents to understand if this system works, and that's something I learned from Cynthia, if this system works and give your student a chance to prove it, then allow them to use it as long as it's helping them to keep organized. It's an amazing difference in the classroom when kids know what their own learning styles are.
And Cynthia, you said too that it's not that we're sort of locked in one style, because we have to adjust to the world that may not be that style, so we still have to adapt in some ways, right, and try different things.
Right. And as parents or teachers, we're not sacrificing any accountability. We don't say, well, you don't have to do it if it's not your style or if you don't feel like it. No. Here's where we need to be. Here's the bottom line accountability. How do you want to get there? If you have another idea for getting there besides the one I suggested, I'm open to that as long as you can prove to me that it works. And that's what kids will rise to the challenge of a lot of times. And again, you're not excusing them from anything. You're not accepting bad behavior. You're not compromising. You're just helping them figure out, how do I get to that bottom line in a way that makes sense to me and that I don't have to give up or be completely overwhelmed.
Talking today about the middle school, the inside story, what kids tell us but don't tell you. It's a Great book written by Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna. You can find out more about the no-no list on Cynthia's website, cynthiatobias.com, or you can go to Sue's website as well, sueacuna.com, A-C-U-N-A, and she has a regular blog that will give you some great encouragement if you're a parent with a middle school student or maybe approaching that soon, or just really any parenting and education advice. One of the questions that maybe you've dealt with and wondered about, we know statistics are suggesting that when kids get into that middle school and maybe senior high time, they have to either make their faith their own or they jettison it when they head out the door to college. So what advice do they have about helping students own their faith in this season of life? We'll talk about that and more in a moment. If you'd like to sign up for a copy of the book or join the conversation, the phone number is 877-933-2484.
Are my vision, O King of my heart, nothing else satisfies, only you, Lord.
50 past the hour, and you're listening to Connecting Faith. We've connected with Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna again today. Had them on before talking about this important topic, middle school, the inside story, what kids tell us but don't tell you. Cynthia's author of several best-selling books, including The Way They Learn and You Can't Make Me, But I Can Be Persuaded. She's been in the Best of Broadcast and Folks in the Family Radio for a number of years, has many years in business and in teaching and in law enforcement. And Sue Acuna is a 20-plus year veteran of teaching middle school, and they've co-authored this great book, which is based on research of hundreds of students telling them what's really going on. You know, one of the areas that we want to focus on, Cynthia, maybe we'll start with you, just in terms of parents helping students own their faith during this season. This is obviously, we know that the decisions that sometimes made now impact in years to come in significant ways.
One of the things that impressed me the most, Neil, when we talked to kids about their spiritual lives, we thought it would be kind of just not that big a deal. But they probably, I would say that's one of the longest discussions that we had with any group of middle schoolers when they started talking about their faith, because what they don't feel like they can talk to their parents about it. Many of them expressed, well, I don't even know why I'm having all these questions, because I've gone to church and all this with my parents, but I'm just, they have questions. They want to try to figure out not their parents' faith, but what does it have to do with them, and how do they figure out, how do I know that God exists, and how do I know that this is the right church, and why do we believe that the Bible is true? And instead of being threatened by those, and parents tend to get a little panicky sometimes, just being able to respond. I love how Sue responds when they ask her questions. I've heard her say it, and I know that she says to them, you know, God isn't afraid of your doubts. He's not afraid of your questions. It's okay to wonder some of these things. But it, for me, as an outsider who always taught high school instead of middle schooler, I fell in love with middle schoolers, by the way, over this last couple of years with this book. But for me, it was enlightening to think, this isn't just marking time until they get old enough to understand. They're figuring it out now. They're trying to figure it out. This is wet cement. This is your time to really be able to breathe into their lives some of this spiritual truth, but not to get too panicky if they ask questions or don't seem to be embracing it. Would you say, Sue, do you have anything to add on that spiritual aspect? Because you deal with it. Sue teaches in a Christian school, so she has some wonderful opportunities.
Sure.
I would encourage parents to hold the line as far as regular church attendance or youth group attendance. Sometimes parents say, you know, the only reason that he wants to go to church is because he wants to hang out with his friends. And I say, that's okay. Because once they're there, you know, God can use all kinds of different people to reach them. We talked to a group of kids in Colorado, and a couple of families had actually changed churches because there was a better youth program, there were people at the other church who they felt could reach their teenagers, and the kids really wanted to go there, and they were more active. And that's a hard thing for parents to consider, but sometimes even to allow your child to go to a youth group at a different church can be a really good thing. You keep your membership here, but because your youth program maybe isn't as strong, they're going with a friend to another church's youth program. There are some awesome youth leaders out there who really get kids and who can really listen to their questions and talk to them where they are. And by golly, if you can find some of those people, have them be involved in your young teen's life. It can just be the best thing for them.
Say a word about, the whole, I guess, relationship, sexuality issue. We haven't really touched on that. Sue, you know, what are you kind of hearing and how are you helping these kids as they're trying to determine who they are and, you know, how they relate to each other?
They are so hyper aware of the other gender. You know, girls are dressing so the boys will notice them. And boys in middle school, most of them are not quite there yet. So sometimes they're a little bit bewildered by the attention. And I think that's when it's important for parents to keep in touch, to know what's going on their child's phone. It's not a time to say, yeah, she's got that phone. That's so complicated. I don't even know how to work it. You need to know how to work it. You need to be able to monitor what's going on the computer because things are being said. It's not unusual for a girl to receive a request from a 7th or 8th grade boy. You know, send me a picture of you in your swimsuit. And girls are flattered by that. And they might comply unless there's been a discussion or unless a parent, they know that there's a chance that the parent might pick up the phone and check it. So parents need to be aware that it's not cute when two sixth graders are boyfriend and girlfriend because they are old enough to have to be aware of their sexuality. And so parents need to be smarter about that. It always bothers me when, and I don't hear it very often, but every so often there is a couple in 7th or 8th grade, and one of the families is maybe going camping, and so they're going to take the boyfriend and girlfriend along. Well, they're going to sleep in a separate tent. I mean, what could happen? Well, things can happen. Kids walk away by themselves. And so parents need to be smart and to discourage without coming down too strong, because we both know that which is forbidden becomes more appealing.
Yeah.
So in a low-key kind of way, discourage the whole dating thing, discourage the boy-girl party in the basement with the dance music going on. Just go for more.
Yeah.
I really think in 7th and 8th grade, same-sex activities are much better.
Sure. We're down to just about 90 seconds left, and I want to give each of you maybe just a chance to say, here's one thing I'd like to leave with you. Sue, we'll start with you, and then Cynthia.
My passion is to tell parents to listen with empathy instead of jumping in to solve it or just learn to say, I understand, or wow, that sounds terrible, or hey, good for you. You'll hear so much more and you'll learn so much more about what's going on inside their hearts.
And I would say don't let go of the wheel. You're going to need to relax your grip a little bit, but don't let go of the wheel. Don't have this time where you just throw up your hands and say, just forget it. When you're older, I'll just try to deal with you then. This is the opportunity that you have to really deepen your relationship with your middle schooler, and they are going to need that relationship when they get to high school. So no matter how frustrating it seems, do everything you can to keep a close and deep relationship with the child, even when they drive you crazy.
Great
because
advice.
That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing that they told us that they don't tell their parents is how much they still need their parents. Mm.
They really want you, yeah.
Good. All right. Some wise advice, some good counsel, some encouragement. Mom and Dad, we can do it. Let's do it with grace and seek God's favor and as we parent our kids. The Middle School, The Inside Story, that's the book we're talking about. Find out more on Cynthia Tobias' website, cynthiatobias.com, sueacuna.com. And check both of those out to find out more about their great writing and resource. Ladies, we thank you for joining with us today here on Connecting Faith.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
If you missed part of the program today, you can check it online at myfaithradio.com.